The Washington Week. I'm Lee Thornton, CBS News, sitting in for Neil Strauser and reporting on the CBS Radio Network. This week, the Senate voted a tax cut. The HEW approved regulations barring discrimination against the handicapped. Another Middle East leader visited the Capitol, and President Carter completed his first 100 days in office. The Senate tax vote came late in the week following much deliberation. The final version set the standard deduction for those who do not itemize at $2,200 for single people, $3,200 for married couples and heads of households. Finance Committee Chairman Russell Long says the measure will benefit the average family.
This bill is a major tax reduction bill for the average family of four, which will use the standard deduction. This bill amounts to a tax cut of approximately $170.
The bill now goes to conference with the House, which has passed a similar measure. This week, President Carter asked Congress to put a lid on skyrocketing hospital costs. Mr. Carter's proposal is seen as a first step toward national health insurance. It would limit a hospital's revenue increases to about 9% a year and put a national ceiling on money spent for hospital construction, facilities, and equipment. That ceiling would amount to $2.5 billion, about half of what was spent in 1976. HEW Secretary Joseph Califano said the plan would not hamper hospitals, but would improve them by forcing them to become economically efficient.
We are not going to the hospital and saying, we're going to strip you down so tight that you can't do anything. We're simply saying that, you know, you weigh 350 pounds, and it's not appropriate to be that obese for your good health and for the good health of the American people, and we'd like you to take a little weight off.
There was a cool reception for the hospital plan in Congress. Congressional Republicans came out strongly against President Carter's proposed energy conservation taxes this week. Republican leaders said Mr. Carter's proposals are, in actuality, a general tax increase to be used to finance welfare reform and to help the president in his commitment to balance the budget. At a news conference, Senate Minority Leader Howard Baker set forth the Republican case.
If we need taxes on a gallon of gas to conserve fuel or to produce more gas, that's one thing. But if we're going to use those taxes to pay welfare benefits or to have welfare reform or tax reform, I think the president should say so.
The Washington Week will continue after this message.
What do you do for hay fever? For allergy? When just antihistamine isn't enough?
Don't give up. Arm yourself with ARM.
Allergy Relief Medicine does everything plain antihistamine does for sneezing and dripping, then does more. Helps decongest even in your sinuses. That's antihistamine relief and more.
Don't give up. Arm yourself with ARM.
Take ARM when needed, only as directed.
President Jimmy Carter completed his first 100 days in office this week. White House correspondent Robert Pierpoint provides this assessment.
Budget Director Burt Lance once explained that his longtime friend Jimmy Carter campaigns liberal but governs conservative. A lot of folks around the country are now beginning to understand what Lance meant, and some of them are happy about their understanding and others not so happy. The most articulate of the unhappy are the liberals in the House and Senate, some of whom, for example, stuck their necks out to support President Carter's tax rebate to the people plan, only to see the president change directions and decide that inflation was the big problem and not poverty or unemployment. Others in Congress were unhappy over Mr. Carter's cutting off their favorite water projects, and still others over his failure to inform them in advance of certain presidential appointments that cut across their political interests. But if many Democrats in Congress are not altogether pleased with a new Democrat in the White House, their constituents back home seem happy, especially out west, where they now perceive Jimmy Carter as more conservative than they originally feared. The fact is that President Carter's informal style and straightforward manner is going down well with people everywhere. And in the long run, this counts for a lot. It can be translated into political power, working with or against the Congress. Robert Pierpoint, CBS News, at the White House.
HEW Secretary Joseph Califano this week signed a set of regulations that will enforce a 1973 law that bans discrimination against the handicapped in federally funded programs. Secretary Califano's action came following a month of sit-ins and other demonstrations by the handicapped around the nation. Califano said the handicapped issue is not just a matter of laws.
It will require a revolution in attitudes. I mean, we've too often in this country said, well, that child is handicapped. We can send that child off somewhere else. These regulations say we want that child to be part of the mainstream of American education or of American health care or of American social services to the greatest extent possible.
King Hussein of Jordan was in Washington this week for 3 days of talks. Hussein's visit was another in a series of meetings President Carter has held trying to get Middle East peace talks underway. Marvin Kalb has more on the story.
This was the week that President Carter changed his tune about the Middle East, though not necessarily his policy. He had just completed talking with Jordan's King Hussein when he told reporters that if there is not substantial progress before the reconvening of a Geneva conference, then maybe it would be better not to have the conference at all. That was a dash of Cold War realism that had not been apparent in the president's earlier comments when he had buoyantly predicted a conference by the end of this year. What seems to have happened is that the president has learned much more about the complexities and difficulties of the Middle East since coming to office. Early in March, when Israeli Prime Minister Rabin came to Washington, the president etched out the shape of his thinking about a Middle East peace, referring quite publicly to such controversial items as defensible borders, a Palestinian homeland, and the nature of peace. Since then, he has received Egypt's President Sadat, Syria's Foreign Minister Kaddam, and of course King Hussein of Jordan. In the course of these talks, the president acquired a deeper understanding of the vast differences between the Arabs and the Israelis, especially on the meaning of peace. With Hussein, the president went into the Palestinian question in some depth. The Jordanian monarch accepts the notion of a confederation between his country, Jordan, and the West Bank, as do the Israelis, but it's not really clear how the Syrians will respond. On May 9th in Geneva, the president will confer with Syria's President Assad, who is in a position to make or break this negotiation. Marvin Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
The Washington Week continues in a moment.
Nobody needs to tell you about the economic problems we're having, but we can offer you the information that may help you understand and possibly do something about them. I'm Ray Brady for Today in Business, heard every Monday through Friday on the CBS Radio Network. In recent broadcasts, I've talked about natural gas prices, the American meat supply, given financial forecasts, and discussed proposals to change the way used cars are sold. Listen to Today in Business, weekdays on the CBS Radio Network.
Hello, brothers. This is Michael Jackson. I'm asking you to do a special favor for me and my brothers, for some kids who don't have any brothers or any fathers either. These kids need big brothers to help them get it on. And you may be just the dude who can really help most. Call the Big Brothers office in your neighborhood today and tell them that you dig it. Right on.
Come into play. No need to worry.
Doctors discovered a benign breast tumor during a routine examination of First Lady Rosalynn Carter this week. Mrs. Carter made a public appearance the day after the tumor was removed and had this to say about checkups.
I know that I wanted to know right then what it was, and I think the best thing to do is to have the checkups and be sure that you... Just be sure that you have the checkup so that if you do have a lump or something, then you can find it and then have something done about it. That's what I did, and I do feel very fortunate.
The Washington Week was produced by Ellen Wadley. I'm Lee Thornton, CBS News.
The World This Week. This is Steve Young, CBS News, reporting on the CBS Radio Network. This week, the first oil well blowout to occur in the North Sea was brought under control. The disappearance of 200 tons of uranium ore on the high seas 9 years ago was disclosed. President Carter met with King Hussein of Jordan, and there were new revelations concerning former President Richard Nixon and Watergate. How was it on Bravo platform?
Nasty and hotter than hell.
And why does he do it?
I've got an expensive wife to keep up.
He is Red Adair. As frequently as 38 times a year, someone in the world says, "Get me Red Adair." The call goes out to Houston, and Adair and his small team come running to Oklahoma, Saudi Arabia, and oil fields in between. Nobody is as skilled in capping blowouts as Red Adair. This week, he was called to the Ekofisk field off the Norwegian coast. CBS News correspondent John Lawrence picks up the story from there.
The Norwegians made up a slogan long ago to express official policy on North Sea oil exploration and development. It was, "Make haste slowly." This week, with a blown-out well on Bravo 14 spouting more than 1 million gallons of oil and gas into the North Sea every day, the Norwegians were insisting on making haste quickly. From the time the blowout occurred on Friday night 9 days ago until the Renegade well was capped yesterday morning, the Texas team of disaster experts and the Phillips Petroleum Company were under extreme pressure to shut down the oil flow, and fast. The arrival of Red Adair, the world's foremost authority on such matters, seemed to make the difference. Trying a technique that failed repeatedly several times earlier in the week, Adair and his fellow Texans finished the job in less than 4 hours. It was a tiresome, torturous, dangerous job accomplished in conditions of extreme heat and noise. And when it was over, Norwegian officials were expressing the belief that they could clean up the giant oil slick, with some expected help from the wind and waves, quickly. John Lawrence, CBS News, Stavanger.
A former government expert on nuclear weapons, Paul Leventhal, this week disclosed that 200 tons of uranium ore somehow were taken in 1968 from a freighter on the high seas, which reappeared flying the flag of a different nation with a different crew bearing a new name. American and European intelligence sources are convinced the uranium wound up in Israel, which 5 years earlier possessed a reactor capable of creating the raw material of atomic bombs. Israel has denied that aspect of the story. Leventhal says the missing uranium illustrates a dangerous hole in the safeguard system that must be plugged.
The guard service at these plants that hold hundreds of pounds of nuclear material, which could be transformed into dozens of atomic bombs of the yield that destroyed Nagasaki. These are private guard services. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission decided that federal guards, government guards, were not needed, nor should the Army be used.
The World This Week continues in a moment.
Your body knows the difference between Anacin and other pain relievers like Tylenol and Daytril. For pain other than headache, Anacin reduces the inflammation that often comes with pain. Those others cannot. With tooth extraction, muscle strain, backache, sprains, or where your doctor diagnoses tendinitis, neuritis, Anacin reduces inflammation as it relieves pain fast. Tylenol and Daytril cannot. Adult strength Anacin. Take only as directed.
Of all times to get hemorrhoids, why?
Pregnancy is a major cause.
What helps?
Well, since you're expecting, ask your doctor before using any medication.
My sister used Preparation H.
For many women, Preparation H relieves occasional pain and itch for hours.
Sounds good.
Preparation H does more. Actually helps shrink swelling of hemorrhoidal tissue caused by inflammation.
Even better.
Preparation H helps shrink swelling of hemorrhoidal tissues.
Use only as directed.
Secretary of State Cyrus Vance this week appeared to soften President Carter's human rights stand somewhat, urging caution and a more realistic approach to the matter.
In pursuing a human rights policy, we must always keep in mind the limits of our power and of our wisdom. A sure formula for defeat of our goals would be a rigid, hubristic attempt to impose our values on others.
Vance cautioned against believing that any rhetorical campaign on behalf of human rights would bring about sudden gains in authoritarian societies. But he said the U.S. will seek worldwide human rights because the goal is right. The goal of achieving a lasting Mideast peace led to a meeting this week in Washington between President Carter and Jordan's King Hussein. Mr. Carter was generous in welcoming Hussein, saying that he could help more than any other Mideast leader. And at the official dinner in his honor, King Hussein repaid the tribute to the president.
Your humility, your genuine interests and problems of others, your courage and your vision, your desire to know the truth are all most encouraging to me.
Upon completion of their talks, President Carter appeared very cautious about the possibility of early progress toward Mideast peace negotiations.
I think it would just be a mistake for us to be overly optimistic. To raise expectations too high would be, I think would be potentially very damaging. I think after May, though, we'll have a much clearer concept of what can be done.
We are on the eve of an attempt by the only president in American history to be disgraced and forced to resign the presidency to rehabilitate his image. So say close associates of former President Richard Nixon, who is about to be seen in the first of four lengthy TV interviews. Those close to that project say the former president stonewalls most Watergate questions and maintains he was not responsible for the cover-up. But the New York Times and Washington Post report that previously secret White House tapes prove the former president, who has said he learned of the break-in 9 months after it occurred, was speaking of covering it up as early as 3 days after the event. President Carter also had a revelation of this week that he's ordered that Mr. Nixon continue to get secret government briefings based on State Department and CIA material. President Ford also provided the material after Mr. Nixon's departure in disgrace from the White House. And Senate Liberal Hubert Humphrey, the Minnesota Democrat, was reluctant to criticize the decision of a Democratic president to continue the practice instituted by his Republican predecessor.
Despite Watergate, despite all the problems of Mr. Nixon's presidency, he did meet with the Russians. He did meet with the People's Republic of China representatives. He was in the Middle East. He did talk to them. And it may very well be useful to be able to compare information, current information, with what he had. And I suppose that's what Mr. Carter has in mind.
It's customary for former presidents to receive intelligence briefings, but there was no precedent about what to do in the case of a disgraced president. In Rome this week, there was a remarkable meeting of two church leaders. CBS News correspondent Richard Threlkeld reports.
It was not the kind of music you'd expect to hear in the sanctity of the Sistine Chapel in the recesses of the Vatican. Protestant English hymns sung by an Anglican choir. Not the kind of sight you'd expect to see there either. A Roman Pope and an English Archbishop walking together in full church pageantry to the altar. The joint prayer service at the Sistine Chapel with Pope Paul and the Archbishop of Canterbury, Dr. Donald Coggan, symbolized just one more step toward eventual union of the 600 million Roman Catholics around the world with 60 million worshipers in the Anglican Church. Both Pope and Archbishop agreed after a series of meetings to continue studying and working toward a union of the two churches and recognize there are still many differences to be overcome. Separate views on the institution of the Pope, divorce, communion, and so on. So while religious reunion between Rome and London will not happen tomorrow, the portrait of a Pope and an Archbishop of Canterbury clasping arms in the Sistine Chapel is a reminder that reunion may be closer than a lot of people think. Richard Threlkeld, CBS News, at the Vatican.
And that's The World This Week, produced by Harry Polosian. This is Steve Young, CBS News.